Good afternoon. This is Nevin Campanella welcoming you to the VBS production of Woodland Star, your net radio source for entertainment and coincidental enlightenment. Are you feeling enlightened? I am. Yeah, I really am. I am really feeling enlightened. I've had a number of things happen this past week that were, for me, kind of amazing. I think it must have something to do with the Christmas season, politically correct, holiday season. Oh, crap. It's Christmas! Merry Christmas to all! Let's see, how did I get enlightened? Well, I went to a wonderful Christmas party yesterday afternoon at my daughter-in-law's, and it was absolutely delightful. Now, why is that so amazing? Many of you probably go to these kinds of things constantly and have just wonderful times. Well, I got to tell you, it doesn't happen to me very often. This was really neat, and I did get enlightened on some family members. You might call it letting things go by, you know, letting go, that kind of thing. And it happened. It really did happen. So I'm feeling really, really good. And what's going to happen to Woodland Star? Well, maybe I should say what's going to happen to Nevin. I made a post just prior to airtime called Swan Song. And literally, it's my swan song out of net radio. Now, some of you know that I, besides doing this show, Woodland Star, which I dearly love, I really love this show because it's a variety for me, and I can do anything I want. I can do a little bit of news. I can just chat with you like I'm doing right now. I can have a guest on, and it's kind of fun. It really is. But we are going to move. Matter of fact, it's kind of all in the works. We're going to leave northern Utah, and we're moving to Prattville, Alabama. So I guess people will start calling me Bubba. I don't know. It might be a good nickname. Alabama is quite beautiful. My family lives in the Prattville area. As a matter of fact, I've got cousins stretched from Alabama all the way down to Florida, and probably up again north past Washington, D.C., kind of covering the eastern seaboard. However, primarily we're moving because we need a change in climate. Some of you may know that up until just a few years ago, we had spent a lot of years in Alma, New Mexico. And, wow, I got to tell you, folks, I love the Southwest. But that's kind of behind us now, and we moved on from that. And now it's time to leave northern Utah. Alabama has very nice, warm weather, extremely mild winters. Yes, I know. I can hear it now. Oh, my God, it's going to be muggy, muggy, muggy. Yeah, so what? Yeah, we'll be in Tornado Alley. So what? Another new adventure. Anyway, my last Woodland Star show will be February 24th. And the last TNT radio show will be February 27th. I do have, assuming things stay as they are, I have a great guest coming up in January, and January 6th on Woodland Star, Amy Sturgis, and we're going to discuss Tolkien's work, you know, traveling along with Frodo through the Misty Mountains. I do have everything planned out for the move to Alabama. The maps are made, and thank God for MapQuest. It is absolutely wonderful. Some of you may also know that Jill and I are full-time RVers, so we live in a trailer. And that's what's going to be happening. We're pulling our trailer down to the Southwest and then across 10 and fork over into 20 and on the way to Alabama. Truth be known, once you get down to the Southwest, most of the trip to Alabama is crossing Texas, which is, I don't know, got to be like 800 miles wide. I mean, Texas kind of goes on forever. Anyway, on for our show. Oh, one other thing. I know that BBS management likes my radio style and has asked me to consider doing radio after I get to Alabama. If I can find a way to do it, I will. One of the problems I'm going to have is my nephew is purchasing a horse ranch, and Jill and I will eventually be moving on to that horse ranch, and so I'm going to become a rancher, I guess, which is going to take up a lot of my time, and I really don't know how well that would dovetail in with the demanding schedule of radio. You know, folks, radio is like a clock. And a lot of the people who do radio, when they first try it on for size, quickly come to find out that it is extremely demanding. I mean, that show comes up like a clock. And for everything to work, you have to be there, along with your guests and so on and so forth. So I am not sure that I can meet that demand, but I will give it consideration. What's next? What do we really have for today? You know, I'm not really sure. On my notes here, it says, oh, yeah, since we are in the holiday season, Christmas defined. But by the way, I would also invite any listener to take a look at the website, woodlandstar.net. I've been redoing the website, and I think I found a real nice way of presenting our website. Basically, it's a blog. It's all in blog format. But at the very top is a menu that comes out of the website, and it kind of gives you an added boost into the blog. It works really well. It uses an iframe. Anyway, where was I? Christmas? Oh, Christmas. You know, I saw a special, and I can't remember what channel was on it. I think it might have been, it was either the History Channel or National Geographic, you know, one of those. Anyway, it was all about Christmas and the origin of Christmas. Now, I have always known that Christmas was not essentially a Christian product, although the name is most certainly is, which literally means the Mass of Christ. However, this show that I watched gave the entire history of how it came about, going all the way back into the pagan world. But that part wasn't near as interesting as the celebrated Christmas Day as proscribed by Catholicism. In fact, what happened was that the Christmas Day celebration, this goes back to England, folks, turns out to be not only a festival, but a very loud festival, and raucous, and sometimes raunchy, and I guess it really got out of hand. I mean, the entire Christmas Day actually went on for more than just one day. The entire celebration basically was from peasants, you know, the people like us. You know, basically, people like us. They didn't have a pot to pee in, but boy, come this Christmas celebration, and everybody had a lot of fun at the expense of the gentry. Now, I want to read you some specific material. By the way, this comes from Wikipedia, my favorite place for useless information. Okay, here goes. Christmas is an annual holiday that celebrates the birth of Jesus. The date of the celebration is traditional and is not considered to be his actual date of birth. Now, of course, folks, anybody who thinks that December 25th is the actual birth date of that particular historical person really needs to catch up in the third grade. You know, this is aside from Wikipedia, there has been some archaeological work, which kind of suggests that his birthday, the birth date of this person, Jesus, might actually have been more towards the spring, probably around April. Anyway, back to the Wikipedia. Christmas festivities often combine the commemoration of Jesus' birth with various secular customs, many of which have been influenced by earlier winter festivals. Now, in most places around the world, Christmas Day is celebrated on December 25th. Christmas Eve is the preceding day, December 24th. In the United Kingdom and many countries of the Commonwealth, Boxing Day is the following day, December 26th. In Catholic countries, St. Stephen's Day, or the Feast of St. Stephen, is December 26th. The Armenian Apostolic Church observes Christmas Day on January 6th. Eastern Orthodox churches that still use the Julian calendar celebrate Christmas on the Julian version of 25 December, which is actually January 7th on the more widely used Gregorian calendar. Because, folks, those two calendars, the Julian and the Gregorian, are in fact 13 days apart. The word Christmas originated as a contraction of Christ's Mass. It derived from the Middle English. And the phrase was first recorded. Listen to this. This is amazing. The phrase is first recorded in the year 1038, compounded from Old English derivatives of the Greek Christos. Now, isn't that amazing? I mean, what amazes me, folks, about some of this is the amount of work that it took to pull out this information from ancient documents and historical records. You know, it's very easy for us nowadays. You know, if I want to know something like, I don't know, what color socks does Don Newsom wear on Mondays while he's doing the production of BBS? I can type it in Google, and it'll give me an answer. But, you know, a couple hundred years ago, it wasn't so easy. I mean, people were digging through musty old textbooks and musty old documents and things that crumbled apart. So I find it fascinating that the historians, you know, they're so tenacious in looking for tidbits of information. They come up and find the first phrase recorded in 1038. What does that mean? That means somebody had to go through all these documents, hundreds and thousands of documents, looking for that phrase and working backwards, and they couldn't find anything prior to 1038. And that's amazing. I'm not that tenacious in anything other than maybe eating. I love to eat. Okay, after the conversion of Anglo-Saxon Britain in the very early 7th century, Christmas was referred to as Geol, which is actually the name of the pre-Christian solstice festival, folks. I'm going to do a little swifty conversion for you here. Geol, G-E-O-L, is actually a form of the English word Yule, Y-U-L-E. And the word Yule is actually derived from that. So when we talk about the Yule, we're talking about what was originally referred to in the old Anglo-Saxon Brittany days as G-E-O-L. Now, the prominence of Christmas Day increased gradually after Charlemagne was crowned on Christmas Day in 800. Around the 12th century, the remnants of the former Saturnalian traditions of the Romans. Saturnalian, folks, that's Saturn, okay? Traditions of the Romans was transferred to the 12 days of Christmas. That's December 26th through January 6th. And, you know, we got songs about it now. Christmas during the Middle Ages was a public festival incorporating ivy, holly, and other evergreens as well as gift-giving. Okay, now, that, you got to understand, is not a Christian thing, okay? It didn't come, the whole idea of ivy and holly and evergreens, that had absolutely nothing to do with the Mass of Christ. That's got to do with where these people were at prior to being dragged in to Christianity. And believe me, they were literally dragged in. They were killed. But they were dragged in. They were dragged in from what? From their pagan background, which had many of these ancient sun worshiping type of traditions, and also the type of tradition that looked very closely at nature and living in harmony with it. Ergo, ivy, holly, and other evergreens were used as a way of flavoring the festival. Now, modern traditions have come to include the display of nativity scenes. Oh, my word. You know, folks, hang on 1 minute. I got to blow my schnoz here. You know, the display of nativity scenes, it's getting silly what's going on in our country. The reaction against the display of the nativity scene in a, you know, tax-paid public place. You know, it's part of our culture. I mean, of course it's connected to Christianity. So what? It's part of our culture. Some people were literally cut off their nose to spite their face. Do I personally believe that there was a baby Jesus and he was born in a manger, you know, and there was no room at the inn and all that? No, I don't. I think it's a wonderful story. But do I actually believe that all that happened? No. I think that it's a beautiful story, giving people hope, setting into place a chance to let go of old hurts and things like that. But did this actually happen? You know, was this particular incident? No, I don't believe that. But I see absolutely no reason not to incorporate it in a festival. Why not? I celebrate everything. Celebrate life. I celebrate Hanukkah. I celebrate birthdays, Christmas days. Life should be a celebration of life. I mean, people celebrating Christmas with a nativity scene is simply another demonstration of a celebration of hope. What is that whole nativity scene about, if not but hope? And I'll tell you, folks, we can use a lot of that right now. We're in a bad way. Not only in the United States, around the world. There's nothing wrong with a nativity scene or any of the scenes that come out to our enriched cultures. And although as bad as the Middle East is right now, believe me, there was a lot that came out of the Middle East. I gotta tell you folks, when the Norsemen and the Britons were living in caves, the people in the Middle East were writing poetry. So don't underestimate its significance historically. While the Middle East has gone a bit nutso because of fanatical religions, it certainly can't take away from what has been given to the cultures of the entire planet. By the way, if you want to see, don't you just love tangents? I could go on them. I start off at Christmas, I get into the Middle East, and now I'm about to hit you with a wonderful movie, which you'll get a bird's eye view of what I'm talking about in terms of the culture of the Middle East going back generations and generations. You know, while the good old Anglo-Saxons were living in caves, people in the Middle East were writing poetry. Take a look at the movie The 13th Warrior, and you'll get kind of an eyeful of what it was like. How about the pre-Christian origins of Christmas? A winter festival was traditionally the most popular festival of the year in many cultures. And by the way, folks, another tangent, we celebrated solstice yesterday. We had a fantastic dinner. Wait, was it yesterday? No, I got to look at my calendar here. On the 21st, excuse me. Actually, the solstice was on the 21st, but here in northern Utah, it was on the 21st at 11 p.m. at night. Anyway, we did have a wonderful solstice dinner. And for us, it is the winter festival. Now, reasons include less agricultural work needing to be done during the winter. In other words, folks, you can have a winter festival because people aren't so busy. And as another tangent, I'm finding that, boy, I'm having a heck of a time keeping the weight off during all these festivities. I spent the entire past year working on a diet, which I did very well at, by the way. But with the lack of activity, not being able to go outside very much because it's so damn cold, I am putting the weight on. Anyway, I have decided I am not going to beat myself up over it. I'm just going to wait until after January 1st, and then I'll deal with the fallout. Okay, back to, in part, the Christmas celebration was created by the early church in order to entice pagan Romans to convert to Christianity without losing their own winter celebrations. Certain prominent gods and goddesses of other religions in the region had their birthdays celebrated on December 25th. Various traditions are considered to have been syncretized from winter festivals. Okay, now, there's a whole bunch of festivals that the pagans did celebrate, Saturnalia being one of them. It was popular throughout Italy and was a time of general relaxation, feasting, merrymaking, and a cessation of formal rules. It included the making and giving of small presents, including small dolls for children and candles for adults. Okay, so that's where our gift giving comes from at Christmas. There was one particular celebration, allegedly it's a representation of Christ, but it was in the form of the sun god Helios riding his chariot. Well, I think you get the idea that there was a lot of blending between the old pagan world and the new modern Christian world. And in order to entice people to stay Christian, the Catholic Church was smart. I mean, they were. They took those days that the pagans did celebrate, and they managed to tie them in to the Christian celebrations, thereby giving everybody a little something. That's called accommodation, by the way. If you're looking for a word, it's called accommodation. As opposed to, get this in your head, folks, assimilation. Assimilation, you just suck it up entirely, and nothing else can be done but just that thing. Assimilation is the ultimate bigotry. But what they were doing, and it's made good political sense, was accommodate. They found a way to accommodate, which I find absolutely amusing when you listen to such people like, let's come up with a good idiot. How could I miss? Bill O'Reilly and the war against Christmas. You know, that fool wants to believe that Christmas is something strictly Christian. It's not. Only the name comes from the Mass of Christ. But the actual celebration, what it is, very old and very pagan. The Christianity does not have an exclusive right to the celebration of Christmas. This fool wants to believe that it is just Christian, and he believes there's a war against it. Well, there's no war against it. There are some silly people running around who are desperately trying to separate church and state and somehow think that if they stomp on a nativity scene, they're going to do that. Well, it's foolish. I'll tell you one thing you cannot get rid of. Ever. Ever, ever, ever. You cannot get rid of an idea. You can hide the nativity scene in a shed somewhere, but never the idea of the nativity scene. What I object to about Bill O'Reilly, the man's a fool. He's just a fool. He cannot approach anything objectively. Completely bigoted. He has a cohort there on, Fox News. I'm trying to think of his name. Oh, Cavuto, I think. They really get to this every Christmas, you know, they want to call it the war on Christmas, like all us non-Christians are in absolute war over not wanting to put up nativity scenes. What a bunch of crap. It really is. First of all, let me tell you about paganism a little bit. To be a pagan, in the fullest sense of the word, means a lifestyle. It's got nothing to do with religion. Pagans are accepting and accommodating by nature, by the very roots of their history. They were accommodating. These were people who lived in extremely remote rural areas, spent a lot of time with nature, and were accepting. People who accept do not reject other cultures. The grief that the nativity scene is getting is not coming from the pagan world. I don't know where it's coming from. But from the New Age type people, the Wiccans, the pagans, these are very accepting people, or they should be, if they're going to use a term. If they're going to call themselves a pagan, then they would be accepting. However, you're going to find, like in anything else, that it takes all kinds. Well, the identification of the birth date of Christ, of course, is debated, and celebration of the Nativity was celebrated from at least 200 A.D. The earliest reference is found in St. Clement of Alexandria's writing in reference to a celebration of the Nativity and the Epiphany. Now, what happened was that over time, Christmas, especially in the Middle Ages, became a revelry that the church really objected to. Because to them, it no longer represented what they wanted, which was the Mass of Christ. It was to the church people, it was simply a bunch of rowdy people having a grand old party. Why not? You know, they lost their acceptance. They could no longer accommodate. Now, interestingly, when Christmas as a concept was brought over to the United States, it was also disapproved of, highly, highly, highly disapproved of. In colonial America, the Puritans of New England disapproved of Christmas. Its celebration was outlawed in Boston from 1659 to 1681. Can you believe that, folks? It was literally outlawed. At the same time, Christian residents of Virginia and New York observed the holiday freely. Of course, this was called state sovereignty, folks. Christmas fell out of favor in the United States after the American Revolution, when it was considered an English custom. By the 1820s, sectarian tension in England had eased, and British writers began to worry that Christmas was dying out. Well, I don't think they really had anything to worry about, because it was such a waited for date. I mean, when people could kind of let it all hang out. It wasn't about to die out. Anyway, they imagined Tudor Christmas as a time of heartfelt celebration, and efforts were made to revive the holiday. Well, it didn't take much to revive it. Charles Dickens came out with his book, A Christmas Carol. Now, that was published in 1843. And, folks, that played a major role, a major, major role in reinventing Christmas as a holiday, which emphasized family goodwill, compassion, you know, and that's kind of like the reverse of what kind of Christmas was being celebrated as hedonistic and excessive. So it's with the publication in 1843 of Charles Dickens' book, A Christmas Carol, that you really get the reinvention of Christmas as a holiday of family goodwill and compassion. So now where is Bill O'Reilly in terms of the Christian concept of Christmas? Well, believe me, folks, it's not with the beginning of Christmas as we know it in the United States, because it comes from a book by Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol. Now, there is, in fact, a slight bit of more history here that actually produces the secular concept of Christmas as we know it in the United States. I know everybody gets goofy over the buying and all that, but you got to understand that it was Clark Moore's 1822 poem. Twas the night, remember, Twas the Night Before Christmas? That really sparks the secular concept of Christmas, the giving of gifts. Now, Irving's stories depicted harmonious, warm-hearted holiday traditions he claimed to have observed in England, although some argue that Irving invented the traditions he describes. They were widely imitated by his American readers. The poem A Visit from St. Nicholas popularized the tradition of exchanging gifts, and seasonal Christmas shopping began to assume economic importance. This only goes back to somewhere around, probably actually around 1835, 1840. Kind of amazing, isn't it? That is the Christmas that we celebrate in the United States has very little to do with the ancient concept of the Mass of Christ. It is very, very little to do with the religious aspect of it, and in fact has much to do with what came from one poet. So, what are we celebrating? Can we have a nativity scene? Of course, why not? The poem A Visit from St. Nicholas popularized the tradition of exchanging gifts. There was no, gift giving prior to that. It was minimal at best. Well, Harriet Beecher Stowe also wrote The First Christmas in New England. And she was writing about a character who complained about that the true meaning of Christmas was being lost to all the shopping and so on and so forth. Well, you know what? If you're going to give a person a gift in today's world, you don't have the time to go make it. You've got to go shopping. And if you want to give someone something, don't feel bad about going to the store. Go do it. It's the intent that counts, folks. Remember the intent? So where does Christmas come from? What is Christmas about? Is it Christmas about? Christmas, of course, means the Mass of Christ. But as we began celebrating it and putting it into our culture, it comes from 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. Well, by the way, did you know that the author was a minister? And if you look at the poem, there is no religious connection made in the poem. Amazing, huh? By the way, it was passed into law by President Ulysses S. Grant around 1870 that the United States made a federal holiday out of Christmas. Well, we can, take a look at what's gone on with the concept of Christmas. I wish that turkey Bill O'Reilly would understand that Christmas is not just Christian, although he would like to think that it is. It most certainly is not. The name obviously means the Christ, the Mass of Christ, but the concept of Christmas and what it was about came out of the pagan footholds. That's where it came from, folks, and it was incorporated into what Rome wanted, the Catholic Church. But everything that went with Christmas, the decorations, the festivity, and everything about it, everything you see today, comes out of pagan tradition. It's got very little to do with Christ, except for this one story, which is demonstrated via the nativity scene. I see nothing wrong with putting the nativity scene into the middle of that. It's great. It enriches us as humans. Have I said enough about Christmas? Santa Claus hands out gifts during the U.S. Civil War in Thomas Nast's first Santa Claus cartoon, Harper's Weekly. Originating from Western culture where the holiday is characterized by the exchange of gifts among friends and family members. 1863, that's when we get the original Santa Claus. Santa Claus is invented in the United States. Now, it is true that there was a Saint Nicholas. It is true. There was a Saint Nicholas. But believe me, the Santa Claus that we have today has very little to do with the Saint Nicholas that came out of the Roman Catholic tradition. Very little, other than the connection in terms of the names. It's true, Saint Nicholas was known for giving out gifts to children. Has nothing to do with the concept of Santa Claus. That's known in the United States today. The popular image of Santa Claus was created by the German-American cartoonist Thomas Nast. And he drew a new image annually, so that the actual, what happened was that the actual look of Christmas or Santa Claus changed every year. It was kind of neat. I'm not really quite sure how it got down to our kind of like final version. I really don't know where that comes from. There is a big, of course, there's a big economic story to Christmas, and, you know, it's the time of year when businesses go into the black. And so they wait for this holiday, and everybody objects to the advertising. I don't mind the advertising. We live in capitalism, folks, and without advertising, you're not going to watch anything on television. I like to happen to watch television. I love the movies. I like watching the news. There's lots of shows that I like. You know, the one-hour stuff? Yeah, I enjoy them all. Can't watch it without advertising. Advertising is good for the country. Businesses wait for Black Friday, which is the day after Thanksgiving, but truthfully, it is the few days after Christmas that they really know whether or not they're going to be in the black on the books. Well, how's that for a review of Christmas? You know, it would almost seem not right to not read Clement Clark Moore's 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. Should I do it? Should I do it? Why not? What the hell is my show? Okay, let's go for it. 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there rose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles in his courses they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, all. As dry as leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop, the cursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling, I heard on the roof, the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my hand, and was turning around, down the chimney, St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur, from his head to his foot. And his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. a bottle of Fonzie in front of his back. Hey, look what Devler just opening his pack. His eyes, oh, how they twinkled, his middle tell Mary. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. I'm from a pipe, he felt tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk and laying the finger aside of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night." Isn't that a wonderful, wonderful piece of poetry, folks? And that is Christmas. That's what American Christmas is. Yes, it includes the Christian concept. It includes the nativity scene. And it includes that dumbass Bill O'Reilly. It includes everything. All of the above. And it's during the Christmas season that we start thinking of others and what others don't have. And for such a fabulous tradition of the celebration of Christmas coming out of Old England, it is kind of sad to see what is going on there. Lancifer made a post on TNT Radio called A Last Fair Albion. And this is a tough one, folks, and it's really, really dumb. I'm going to read this. Quote, as charities launched their annual drive to help the homeless at Christmas, Westminster Council in central London is pursuing plans to ban soup kitchens from its streets. It has won some surprising support. Now, you can read the rest if you want, and maybe I'm wrong, but this made me cry at first glance. I've done some time on both ends of a free kitchen, and they were good times. I've been poor and I've been comfortable and at times seemingly rich. I don't mind any of these conditions because they all present unique opportunities for all sorts of good learning. But I can't say the next word, folks. But darn, soup kitchen meaning being equated to bad is just plain mean. Well, actually, end quote. That comes from Lancifer, and you know what? This is really, really sick. Why is this happening? Well, I'm going to go to the original article, and I think it's worth just kind of reading a few spots out of it. Now, I want you to understand that the mayor does not agree with what is going on. If you get a chance, please do look at Lancifer's post and click on the link to the news.bbc. Anyway, I'm going to read now from that. As charities launch their annual drive to help the homeless at Christmas, Westminster Council in central London is pursuing plans to ban soup kitchens. Gary is one of the estimated 500 people who sleep rough every night in England. Okay, so sleeping rough means, folks, you're out on the street, maybe you have a sleeping bag, but you're late, essentially outside, sleeping on the ground. It's really horrendous, believe me, it's freezing, he says. You go to bed freezing and you wake up shaking in the morning. And that's even with a sleeping bag. And you see people without sleeping bags, and they're just shaking all night. They don't sleep. Charities estimate that in London, over the course of a year, 3,000 people will spend the night on the streets. Oh, my God. Can you imagine 3,000 people in London? For them, Gary believes a soup kitchen is a lifesaver. Quote, it's vital because most people would die if they didn't have soup runs. But according to Westminster City Council, soup kitchens are drawing former rough sleepers out of hostels and back onto the streets. Folks, that's got to be the dumbest thing I've ever heard anybody say. People are going to leave the hostel so they can go get free food? Like, talk about dumb. Who's going to believe that? Some turkeys will, probably Bill O'Reilly. Okay. Conservative Angela Harvey, the council's cabinet member for housing, objects to the large numbers of volunteers who converge on central London to hand out free food and drinks to the homeless. She says up to 50 soup kitchens come into Westminster from elsewhere. When you see 50 to 80 people waiting for a soup run, they are not homeless people. By and large, the majority will not be rough sleepers. You see them going off with large carrier bags stuffed with food. Oh, my God, we've got to stop this. People stuffing bags with food. You know, it takes jerks like this to make a world, though. You know, I mean, you got to have both sides of the equation. You know, I'm trying to think of, you remember the guy that played Charlie Chan in the movies? Great line from one of his movies. I wish I could remember his name. I'm blocking on it. And essentially it came down to he was being told by someone that he might be being foolish for giving money away to beggars, because the beggars might not actually be beggars. And his response was, you know, I'd rather make 10 mistakes and not take the chance of missing out on the one that isn't. In other words, one person who's in need going hungry. Okay, Westminster has already tried to implement a ban through the new London Local Authorities Bill. They failed last month when the other London councils refused to back it. But Westminster is determined to press ahead one way or the other. Now, London Mayor Ken Livingstone says, I don't think anyone seriously faced with the choice of coming into a hostel will stay on the street because of a soup run. I agree with him. And for anybody to even suggest that, it's just got to have dog shit for brains. I have no idea what this is all about. But it is certainly not people leaving the by the way, folks, a hostel is kind of like dormitory-style living quarter, okay? And many young people use them across Europe as they travel. They're very inexpensive to live in, or they used to be. And, quote, and the idea, with all the other problems we've got with crime, that we should have police diverted to seizing their soup is just bizarre. I got to agree with the mayor, with the London mayor, Mayor Livingstone. I mean, it is bizarre. Can you imagine the police with all the things that they've got to do? Now they got to go around seizing soup kitchens because of this stupid ban? I don't know. You know, I guess it takes all kinds. And I lose patience with it. I mean, this is right up Bill O'Reilly's alley. Oh, with Neil Cavuto. Yeah, oh, yeah, you know, ban the soup kitchens. We don't want those nasty-looking homeless people on London. I might go visit there. Oh, a little bit more. House price worries. The government drive to reduce homelessness has helped bring down the numbers sleeping rough by around two-thirds, but recent bad economic news, noticeably the slide in house prices, has rung alarm bells. Well, folks, you know what? It's going to get worse. There are more and more homeless people, and I think they've kind of reached a stable number the past few years, but I think you're about to see it shoot up again, because there is about to hit a mortgage crisis in this country. And a lot of people who got caught up with predatory loans, they're going to lose their homes. They're not going to have a place to sleep. I'm not talking about, you know, some single dude 28 years old with a backpack on his back. No, I'm talking about a mom and a dad and maybe four kids. What do they do? If we were talking only about one family, not so bad, you know? But we could be talking about thousands. Could get rough. Well, Lansford is correct. Alas, fair Albion. And you got to understand that, you know, he's looking at at England as being capable of more than this kind of foolishness. The Westminster Council, they're just being really, really turkeys. I want to get to compare candidates, but before I do, there is a wonderful little post written by Don. The title of it, I want to read this whole post, it's great. It's called The Practice to Deceive. And Don posted this, around 9 o'clock on the 22nd, 9 o'clock in the evening. Okay, the name of it is The Practice to Deceive by, by Mad Dog, okay. But I don't think it's any secret that Don is Mad Dog, all right. Sometimes he's a mad dog. All right, quote. When first we learnt this practice of deception, it is of unknown consequence, and therefore without wisdom. Thus, we tried it, and so sweet it was. All of a sudden, we could twist the truth to be what we wanted it to be. How powerful we felt. My, oh my. This was a dandy of a communication plug we now had. And in our newly formed arsenal during our journey in experience, the truth is never hiding, only hidden at times. We have now grown up to be adult souls, responsible and powerful, loving in all ways. For it is our power to go beyond the veil that sings, united we stand, as one, we are one. I just love the totality of that phrase and its simple meaning. Throughout the ages, we found our earthly playground had slowed her energy down to accommodate our physical aspirations. See, folks, is that word accommodate again? We lost touch with our knowledge to go play in the unknown, to see firsthand what it meant to be of less than impeccable integrity, the consequences of which would unfold slowly in a way we could work with physically to truly grasp the lessons of processing this new practice. Most upon this playground and Center for Higher Learning have begun to grow with new understandings that somehow life is best served with truth. They are wiser from the lessons and are eager to move beyond the veil. They are rising to the frequency of Mother Earth, who embraces them all and will share with them the magic of her being. We are living beings of light that have grown up and will soon behold to the magic of our majesty. In other words, folks, we're soon going to be aware of our own incredible majesty. A time of miracles is upon us, and we can dance. Gaia chose to be a place of soul development and joy. She is all that and more. She is a permanent place of power, joy, love. Celebrate her change during this Christed mass awakening. You see, service to self is exactly that. It's putting on your child's oxygen mask after yours in an airplane emergency. It's thinking about yourself first and putting yourself first. That mentally does not harmonize. It separates. Our growth has shown us the beauty in our individuality, the joy in our diversity, and the love in our celebration of this infinite variety of choice that glorifies creation, unifies it beyond ourselves and into the realm of service to others. I trespass not against you, but I will witness to you and your truth. However, when your truth robs me of mine, I have much to learn. Wasn't that beautiful? wow, I didn't know Dot could be so poetic. Pretty cool. Well, folks, we have run out of time. I wanted to talk about some of the things that I was interested in and some of the things I picked up, but I know we got to close the show down. So I want to wish every one of you a wonderful, wonderful Christmas. Enjoy it. Be merry. Bring in the nativity scene. Bring in the ivy. Bring in the toys. Go spend a few bucks and have a hell of a good time. Good night, folks. That's your wrap, Don.